Bus? What's on 41st Street?
I don't know, but they're getting a Beeline bus soon.
Oh, really?
They're getting that good transit. Lost Lagoon.
Fake? It was man-made.
Really?
Indeed.
I believe that, actually. It looks pretty man-made. I just know there's a
much of Stanley Park was constructed. It's a curated wilderness. And when you listen to my audio doc, when it comes out, you will learn about it. Well, a little bit. I can't get into it
too much. Man, we should have talked about my geese documentary.
Okay, now we're out of time. God, finally, we found something to talk about.
Okay, point being, the geese are going to take over Vancouver.
Okay. I saw a headline that you wrote that there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
That's annoying, I guess. I think
they're cool.
Yeah, they're fine, I guess. Whatever. Okay, so we're going to end. So this has been Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. Tune in again next week at 5 p.m. for more local news. And thank you for listening. Take care. The Golden Girl, roaming in the cities, berries at her heels, wild and free. 18, was it fine to show up in a town?
trying to get crazy with this, eh? Don't you know I'm loco? Loco.
Something you can't understand. class, but the lesson plan he can't recall. The student's eyes don't perceive the lies mounting on every fucking wall. Closure is well kept, I guess he fears playing the fool. The place the students sit and listen to that bullshit that he'd learned in school. Europe ain't my rope to swing on. Can't learn a thing from it. Yeah, we hang from it. Gotta get it. Put brother man. I'm like a motherfucking brother man. Expose and close the doors on those who try to strike them and mangle the truth. Cause the circle of hatred continues unless we react. We gotta take the power back.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live on unceded Musqueam territory on UBC's Point Grey campus. I'm your host, Spencer Latu, and for today's show, we are speaking truth to power about forced sterilization, Alberta politics, and Russiagate. But before we get to all that, I would like to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. And rather than keeping this as a tokenistic gesture to the Indigenous peoples of Canada, as is generally done on UBC's campus, we will keep the Indigenous struggle for self-determination and justice at the forefront of our consciousness. We will begin this show and every show until there's justice for Indigenous people talking about colonialism. So right now, we are following the forced sterilization story that we've been discussing on this show. So this is an article from the CBC. So the title of the headline is Indigenous Women Come Forward with Accounts of Forced Sterilization, Says Lawyer. The subheading is Lawyer Says Sterilization Without Informed Consent Has Been Performed as Recently as 2018 in Saskatchewan. This was written by Avery Zingle of CBC News, posted today, April 18th, 2019. So the article reads, a proposed class action lawsuit alleging the coerced sterilization of Indigenous women in Canada is turning up reports from more than 100 women who say it happened to them. Some of the women did not realize that physicians, nurses, or other healthcare professionals, the government, couldn't make decisions for them about their bodies, said Alyssa Lombard, Saskatchewan-based lawyer and a partner of Samaginous Worm Lombard. Lombard said the reports are coming from the Northwest Territories, Yukon, Manitoba, Ontario, Alberta, Quebec, and BC, of all places. It's important to highlight how traumatizing these practices have been and how difficult it is for women to come forward and talk about and disclose what happened to them, she said. The firm applied to certify the class action in February 2018 in Saskatchewan. The proposed class action would apply to Saskatchewan, but if women come forward with similar stories, expanding to other jurisdiction is a possibility, said law partner Helen Samaginous. According to the summary of claim, the term coerced sterilization refers to the practice of sterilizing Aboriginal women in Canada without their proper and informed consent. It says the practice has been going on since at least the 1930s. Alberta and BC are the only two provinces that enacted legislation allowing for sterilization in the 30s. A series of consistent actions, but also inactions, allowed forced sterilization to continue. I would say it's the case up until today, when you know something is happening and you don't intervene effectively to stop it. That's an inaction that leads to a particular consequence, she said. So I am now joined by my co-host, Ajit.
What's up?
Ajit, welcome. Congratulations on finishing your final today.
Oh, thank you.
That's awesome. So I don't know if you saw the headline there. Indigenous women come forward with accounts of forced sterilization.
I swear we have discussed this prior.
Yeah, this is a deja vu moment. There's more that have come forward. Now we're up to we're more than 100, and and there's reports from BC even. Mm. So we're sterilizing women in British Columbia, Indigenous women sterilized in BC. Wow, why is this not front page news? What's front page news instead?
Right, burning
churches,
cathedral, which is important, but you know, not as important.
Burning
as
planet? Nope, that's not in the headlines. No. Genocide going on? Nope, can't make the headlines.
Where?
Yeah,
of colored people.
Mueller or Mueller? Anyways, so here's some thoughts I had about this whole thing. So, the violent dispossession of land is what gave rise to the settler colonial state we know as Canada. Mm-hmm. So. And something that I was thinking about, at least, was, you know, the role Indigenous women play in the genocide. So, you know, it's pretty obvious why, you know, Indigenous men needed to go, because there were physical resistance. But what is it about women? Because although men are the ones that would, you know, fight in the army and stuff like that, you know, in a pitched battle against the Canadian state, why is it that women face a disproportionate amount of oppression, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this one theoretical explanation for it, which I thought was fascinating, was that when it comes to women in war and genocide, is that women are the ones who, you know, reproduce indigeneity, right? They give birth to Indigenous children. They teach Indigenous culture. You know, they raise Indigenous children.
Right.
So it's almost more important to the state, the settler colonial state and the settler colonial project, to destroy Indigenous women. You know, that's why currently the most common cause of death for Indigenous women is physical violence, you know? So even though that, you know, quote unquote colonialism ended, you know, Justin Trudeau, I would take issue with that point.
Right.
So I think, what do you think about that, for what's going on with this forced sterilization thing? Because, you know, if you forcibly sterilize women, boom, no more Indigenous people.
Right. Well, I mean, it gets right to the point, right? If you want to curb their population growth, you
get to the source of it.
Right. You like, you know, you, and I mean, this is, I guess, this is the most direct method, right? Of course, they do the whole cultural genocide route, which is, you know,
Residential schools,
of course, and, you know, just
banning potlatches, you know,
right, exactly,
and banning just languages
and like taking away any sort of values that they had, which were fundamental to their growth. So
yeah, now you're just now physically removing the ability to reproduce,
right? And I'm assuming people. This is still happening under the guise of, you know, these women are somewhat criminally
negligent.
We're gonna get to that.
I'm glad. Okay. Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up. So okay, so back to the article. Although there wasn't formal legislation on forced sterilizations in the Northwest Territories, there were failed attempts to do so in 1939-1941. Northern women were sent to southern hospitals, including the Charles Camsell Indian Hospital in Alberta. According to, this is from the researcher Stout, between 1971 and 1974, this hospital, Charles Camsell Indian Hospital in Alberta, sterilized 125 patients. In those same years, at least 580 sterilizations took place at federally, so Canadian government, operated hospitals in the Prairie Provinces, Yukon, Northwest Territories, and Ontario. Indigenous women made up 95% of those sterilizations, so it's fair to say that's pretty very targeted.
Right.
Alberta amended its sterilization laws in 1937 to remove consent requirements for women diagnosed as, here it is, Ajit, this is what you're talking about, mentally defective. A change that led to an increase in the number of sterilizations. More than 77% of Indigenous people who underwent sterilization were declared mentally defective and could be sterilized without consent.
Right.
Despite the repeal of sterilization legislation, sterilization without informed consent has been performed as recently as 2018 in Saskatchewan. So, building off your last point, Ajit, so this seems that you raised the issue of what were your words exactly again?
Well, it's like, under what guise or pretenses are they doing such a horribly invasive procedure?
Yeah, and so the one that they came up with, what was the one that you came up with? What was your guess, shot in the dark? Because you were so close.
Right. Mental instability, I think I mentioned.
Or bad parents or something like that.
Bad parents, right.
Something. Well, it's funny because, you know, they're mentally defective, so they need to be sterilized. They're bad parents, which is why they need to be, which is why foster care has disproportionately such a high number of indigenous people.
Right.
But so it seems like along the same line. So, and another thought I was having on this, so mentally defective, right? So now we're entering the intersection of racism, you know, white supremacy and settler colonialism, eradicating indigenous people to steal their land, with the another axis of oppression, ableism. Right? So thinking that people who are quote unquote, you know, what does mentally defective even mean, right? Like, you know, of not sound mind, you know, not, you know, don't do the same things that you do, you know, so it's such a broad brush.
And intentionally vague, just so they can pick and choose who they want to apply it to.
And then it's also saying that, you know, like, oh, because these people aren't able in the way that, you know, you, that regular people that sell their labor are, right? You know, physically able people, that you're allowed to do these things. So it's an interesting intersection of those things. So, you know, intersectionality, very important to this, you know, shouts out Crenshaw, and why we need to, you know, think about these things. And on that same, you know, a thought, I was thinking genocide, ableism, you know, who had a lot of people go to concentration camps because they were, you know, quote unquote, you know, disabled.
Right.
That's, you know, that was the Nazis,
the classic example.
Right. So it's like, you know, the Canadian, you know, and, you know, where did Hitler learn this stuff? Right. You know, where did fascism come from? Right. It's not that fascism came out of Hitler's ideas.
No,
it was, you know, who was his greatest inspiration? Jim Crow South.
Right.
America. Right.
British
How to create
imperialism.
British imperialism and Canadian imperialism, Canadian genocide. Right. So it's, you see how, you know, these, you know, we as a country have given, you know, the toolkit to allow the Holocaust to happen. But it's, you know, why was it that way? Like, obviously, you know, the sterilizations were happening after the Holocaust, but, like, you know, the genocide of indigenous people started well before the Holocaust. So, like, that's where, you know, you can kind of see where, like, you know, fascism, genocide kind of get these ideas.
Right.
And how intrinsic to it is ableism.
Absolutely. And I think it sheds extra light also on how a profession like, you know, in the medical field, right, like they like to tout how, you know, we're decent enough not to tamper in politics. Like, no, you're not.
It's
like,
very political.
It's absolutely political.
And it's very racist.
Right. And like, you know, the onus falls on them for pretty much, I guess, defying whatever kind of code you have, because that's totally unethical to, you know, I don't know what sort of psychiatric pseudoscientific evaluations they do, but it's clearly not based on whatever scientific evidence they look for in a regular case.
Yeah, no, it's a very, you know, and very specific, right? So it's and you know, 77% of them were declared mentally defective. So it's like so intertwined with that exact way of getting that done. So it's really terrible. And you know, you see how it's not just oh, the government, right? It's like not just oh, the RCMP, oh, you know, this, you know, people over here. It's everything, right?
It's the whole
system, you know,
right?
Including science, including medicine, that it's in on it, right? It's all, you know, and I'm not, once again, this isn't like conspiracy mongering where they got behind closed doors to do it, but it's more that it's a system that is beyond even the people that created it. They just can't help but replicate and reproduce that oppression in what they're doing.
Right. And you know, at the moment they may think they're, you know, oh look, I'm part of some sort of beneficial project, but you know, once you zoom out and really look at what you're doing, you're like, oh, never mind, that's not it.
Yeah, it's not helping anybody, right? So, and that's a really good point that, you know, in these individual cases, like, you know, like, sure, maybe one of them was, you know, mentally defective. And, you know, I mean, obviously eugenics, you know, the long history of eugenics, you know, you would hope by at this point that, you know, people would realize that eugenics is terrible. But, you know, eugenics, you know, it came out of a place where people really thought they were progressing human society, right? They were thinking, you know, let's, you know, weed out the bad and then, you know, keep the good. But, you know, where is this tied into? It's white supremacy, right? So, you know, when you go into it with a white supremacist framework, you can't help but replicate white supremacy through what you're doing. So back to the article. So this is about high sterilization rates in Nunavut. So Stout compiled data and historical accounts, including articles in Southern publications by missionary Robert Lechat, who alleged the federal government was ramping up the sterilization of indigenous women in the 1970s in the North. So, according to Stout's research, Lechat reported in 1976 that 26% of women in Igloolik, Nunavut, between the age of 30 and 50, were sterilized.
Wow.
He reported almost half of women that age were sterilized in Naujat, In Guzzo Haven, 31% had been sterilized. In Chesterfield Inlet and Cougarac, more than a quarter of women underwent sterilization. If there is no precise policy for sterilization, there is at least a very definite will to prevent the increase of Inuit in the Canadian North, Lechat wrote at the time. As a result of the bad press, the federal government conducted an inquiry in the 1970s which yielded lower numbers. That inquiry also failed to capture how many women were sterilized with consent or their specific experiences. It confirmed at least 70 sterilizations were performed on women in Nunavut, in Chesterfield Inlet, Naujak, Cougarac, Guzzo Haven, Iqaluit, and Rankin Inlet from 1966 to 1976. The reason given for sterilization in all but one instance is that the women gave birth to two or more children. Other data indicates as many as 180 sterilizations were performed in northern settlements between 1970 and 1973, but the inquiry did not capture sterilization in other communities. Okay, so that's the end of the article. Let's just, you know, there's a lot to parse there. So, as a result of the bad press, the federal government conducted an inquiry in the 1970s. You know, not much has changed with these folks. You know, bad press, and boom, next thing you know, we're reconciling and we're inquiring, right. And you know, we're doing.
They did
all
a
this.
Report, okay?
Yeah, they did a report, which obviously, you know, they, because they're the ones. So, and what a great group of people to do it. So the people who are conducting the genocide should thus study their own work, right. And of course, their findings would be as accurate as possible.
Right. So we can study the studies.
Yeah. That's awesome stuff. So, you know, we're talking like a quarter of women. That's huge. Huge numbers.
Right. And how much you want to bet a majority of these towns in which these sterilizations occurred, they're like 9 out of 10 indigenous, maybe 95%.
Oh, 100%. Indigenous? Yeah. Well, they're going after Inuit, right? So it's just, and you know, they're wiping out the language, like you said. They're wiping out the culture. They're just wiping out the ability to reproduce and give birth to indigenous children. So I think it says a lot about, you know, what Canadian society, you know, when we talk about Canadian values, when are we going to throw this in, you know?
It's, yeah.
And it's happening all over the country. It'd be different if it was one province.
Right.
Territories, prairies, coast. Ontario, Quebec, everywhere,
right?
You know, everywhere.
It's extremely interesting because, like, I can definitely see them making the argument, and I bet they do from their point of view that, you know, I'm sure these women, having suffered the wrath of, you know, colonialism and its history, do live in abject poverty, most of them, right? But, you know, if you made a similar comparison, if this was going on, you know, I don't know, let's say with the Canadian black community, there would be a massive outrage. But I guess that's one byproduct of colonialism, is that the fact that we've kind of embedded in our psychology, mm-hmm. this kind of understanding that there is something inherently deficient about indigenous Canadians,
or that they're like so different that you can't even have that normal human empathy for them,
right? Exactly.
Because I get what your point is. Like, obviously, you know, black people were subjected to eugenics all the same as, you know, indigenous people. They were experimented on, like Tuskegee and stuff like that,
right? Exactly.
But I agree with you, there's something different.
There would
about
be a greater
settler colonialism. Yeah, there's something, because it's so true, because, you know, obviously immigration, you know, like the immigration thing is, you know, xenophobia is really large, but there's just something about racism towards indigenous people, which is just such a, you know, a common occurrence, just something that's so, just so taken for granted in our society. Right. It's just something that's just so like part and parcel about living here. You can't help mm-hmm. but, you know, see that in just the attitude,
right,
or the framing of anything about them. It's just so lopsided. I don't even know how to describe it. So, and here's a thought. Here's a question I had. So why do you think it was, you know, why do you think they got away from it in the North? You know, this is me speculating. You know, I was thinking, you know, there's less people out there, you know, less, you know, media that seems like there's only one guy out here. This fella, Robert Lechat, you know, who was the only guy, a missionary there. So like the only people out there were there for very dubious reasons, right. You know, he's a missionary trying to, you know, convert these people into mm-hmm. Christianity, doing part of the settler colonial work. However, in this weird way, you know, we have strange bedfellows here where he's tracking the genocide of the Canadian state for whatever reason.
Yeah. And I think another reason is that, you know, Northern Canadian society, contemporary, exists circa 1950, I feel. Like, it's just, it just, it's just frozen in time in this sort of state of complete underdevelopment. It's kind of our third world. It's our ghettos, like, of the most...
Well, because it's mostly indigenous.
Exactly.
Or they're, like, or you're there for energy exploitation.
Exactly. Yeah. There's, like, you know, no... There's no white people there, so I guess...
Yeah, there's nothing... There was enough to steal, so they didn't bother going up there.
You can't put nice suburbs there, so...
Yeah, we couldn't gentrify... There's no gentrifying at Callaway, right? So they just don't bother to go all the way up there. That makes sense. You know, I was just thinking about, you know, like, why, right? You know, because... Or, like, how that affects... I'm sure it's the remoteness of the territory, which certainly didn't help the
situation. And I think they also fear because it's viewed... The territories are heavily demographically indigenous, right? And maybe out of fear of some sort of, you know, community solidarity springing up, that's what they target them for. It's really
Yeah, it's probably important. Yeah, it's probably super important for them because, like, such a, like you said, such a, like, a large group of indigenous folk, obviously that's where they're going to put a lot of effort into wiping them out. So we're going to take a short break, but we'll be right back after that to discuss the Alberta election, the Alberta provincial election. So stay tuned.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
You know what's better than reading a great magazine? Reading a great magazine that also helps you fight poverty. Megaphone Magazine is sold by homeless and low-income vendors on the streets of Vancouver and Victoria. Vendors buy magazines for 75 cents and sell them for $2. It's flexible, low-barrier work for people who may not have access to traditional jobs. Download the Megaphone app to find vendors and buy the magazine, even when you don't have change.
Tune into Post Rock Friday from 10 to 11 with your host John P for the best in post rock, drone, ambient, experimental, and noise.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from NCU Musqueam territory. I'm with my co-host Ajit.
What's up?
And I'm your host, Spencer Latu, and we're here to discuss the very tragic results, but not unexpected results, of the Alberta provincial elections. So, Ajit, did you hear what happened?
Yes, I did.
Can you believe that the Albertans elected a very far-right conservative government?
Like, am I surprised? No.
Yeah. Did you know that bears poo in the woods?
Right.
Yeah. The sky is blue. Conservative blue. UCP blue.
Right.
So
we need water to survive.
This article, yeah, and they're going to set that on fire, too. So the article that we're checking out today is from the Tai.ca, written by Jeff Dembicki. This was posted April 17th, 2019. And the headline reads, Jason Kenney wins in Alberta, setting stage for fierce conflicts. Observers predict legal fights ahead for leader who vowed to scrap on social issues and environment. So the article reads, Albertans elected one of the most socially conservative and environmentally hostile governments in its history Tuesday night, handing majority of seats to the United Conservative Party and electing its leader Jason Kenney as premier. Experts contacted by the Tai predicted that rollbacks to LGBTQ rights promised by the UCP during its campaign could lead to court battles, while Kenney's pledge to abolish Alberta's carbon tax and accelerate oil sands development sets the stage for fierce pipeline conflicts with BC and legal fights with the federal government.
Bring it on.
For months, polls predicted that Kenney, a cabinet minister under former Conservative Prime Minister and ghoul, Stephen Harper, would win a landslide over the New Democratic Party of Rachel Notley that Albertans had unexpectedly elected in 2015. That was borne out in the results Tuesday night, that the UCP won well over the 44 seats needed to form a majority, despite a tightening in polls in recent weeks caused by an almost never-ending stream of controversies, also known as the Bozo Volcano, from UCP candidates who at various points in the campaign were shown to have compared homosexuality to pedophilia, scorned proponents of abortion, and lamented the replacing of white people by visible minorities. In the end, it seemed voters acted the way pollsters and other observers had predicted all along, by voting in a government that promised to do whatever it takes to get Alberta's bitumen to the Pacific coast and scrap climate change policies brought in by Notley's NDP and Justin Trudeau's federal Liberals. So, where to begin? Let's talk about the oil and climate change stuff, because that seems to be, you know, the biggest stakes, but also what I think this is ultimately all about. Notley's NDP, you know, fiercely pro-pipeline as well. So, you know, to the people of Alberta, you know, what's the difference?
Right.
You know, you have one that's going to fight harder for the thing, then you have one that won't fight as hard. That's kind of like, it's in both camps, right? Because Notley was like passing the climate change stuff, but was doing so. And that's where I feel like it is. It's just, you know, Jason Kenney is kind of just what
he needs to fit their character of and a he's guy just, who's on their side.
And like, he's it to like the nth umph degree, versus Notley was like a confused in climate change denier.
Right.
You know, she was like, yeah, it's real, but I don't care.
Yeah, we want clean air. Now let's build a pipeline.
And, you know, somehow I know that the global price of oil has plummeted, but somehow building this pipeline will make things better. In some weird twisted fantasy. So that's where we're trying to get at here. So the way I read this is a reaction to the pipeline battle that we've been covering on this show and the carbon tax that seemed to set their hair on fire. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, what is this all about? I was listening to Canada Land Shortcuts today, and Jen Gerson, cursed conservative, half decent, but still a conservative, was trotting out the classic economic anxiety argument where, you know, oh, these people aren't horrible racists. racist. They just voted for a horrible racist because they're economically anxious, and that, you know, this boom bust economy of oil that, you know, they were making six figures on, and, you know, ripping around in 4x4s and spending $50,000 on Ford F-350s.
Right.
And now it's blown up in their face and you're supposed to feel bad for them. And then, of course, you know, is it really economic anxiety, or is it that they were built, you know, or is that they were stealing their wealth due to the fact that, you know, they're built on, you know, dispossessed indigenous land, like, you know, bringing it back to our first topic of the day. And that at the end of the day, these people aren't really economically anxious. They're just their unearned privileges were threatened, and now they're mad about it and going to say build the pipeline, which is kind of like, in my opinion, the Canadian version of build the wall.
Right. That's actually a very good parallel drawn there, and I would say that's exactly on point. It's true. It's like the more the heavy industry, natural extraction industry, shrinks, which has been going on for like 40 years, 50 years at this point almost, it boils the blood of, you know, that lowest common denominator conservative voter the most, because like you said, it is seen as a form of entitlement to them.
I think it's entitlement because it's like, you know, like, oh, I work hard, and it's like, well, you know, you're in this horrible industry, terrible for the environment. So really it's, you know, you're taking the cost of, you know, what this is doing to our planet and putting in your pocket. Well, not even putting, you're putting pennies on the dollar in your pocket, because the vast majority of the money goes to those, you know, the board of Kinder Morgan or the shareholders of all other, like TransCanada and the like, right? So it's not even, and it's just like, oh, I get to live in this, you know, very privileged bubble world. And
And we're not trying to attack the working man. That's the farthest thing from it. It's just,
it's like the working man should have the working man's interest in their mind. Like, I'm not here to crap on other workers. I'm just here to explain to those said workers who, you know, enjoy their unearned privileges, unearned privileged space in society, and all that gets taken away, rather than doing, you know, the logical step, which is that, hey, you know, the reason why we're all being down is because the bosses have us in chains and we need to break our chains. They just get mad and are like, oh, I like the chains I was in before. I was in these gold diamond plated chains that were way better than your, you know, crappy chains.
Right.
Now that I'm in the crappy chains, I want to be back in the gold-plated chains.
Exactly.
So to me, they're just being ultra bootlickers.
Right. And they were subject to the full mercy of the market. And
how did that work out for you?
Right. And it
not so great,
left
huh?
Them in the dust. And it's funny, like, this.
And now I'm supposed to feel bad.
Right. You know, they'll pay you $80,000 when the going is good, even though I'm sure the stuff you're breathing in working there is not even worth it. But you know, once the, you know, like, you know, well, global oil prices drop, or, you know, I'm not familiar with the oil and gas international industry, but
let's just say it's gone down a lot.
It's gone down a lot, right? And like, these sort of factors are completely out of your control, right? So, I mean, I get it. They're concerned about job security in their lifetime. I'm assuming, you know,
there's other industries,
right? But
go get another job. Doesn't everybody say that to, you know, like, isn't that their,
right,
like,
capitalist propaganda, right?
Yeah, go get another job. But it doesn't apply to you. Oh yeah, because you're white and you get better things than the rest of us,
right?
Duh, how could I have forgotten? So, and the reason I also,
and I feel one more, and then they're like 10 years away from retirement, so they don't want to.
They just dropped out of high school, and they're just like, oh, well, that would mean I have to go get my GED.
True.
And that's stupid. I would have to go to liberal arts college to get indoctrinated with liberalism, you know, which is what they think happens at the University of Calgary.
Right.
I digress. So another reason why I equate the build the pipeline is, and it, I want to find that build the pipe clip, just because it's just so good. But the reason why I compare it to the build the wall thing, because it's built on misinformation. Disinformation, like, really. Right. And it's the, so why are America, why do Trumpers want to build the wall? Because they think that it'll, you know, save their jobs from the Mexicans that, you know, but they're not even Mexicans, considering that they're indigenous people from Central and South America that got uprooted and cast out of their, you know, existences due to the shock therapy that the neoliberal coups that the Americans instituted themselves displaced so many people to come to America. So it's like this, like, weird circle.
Especially
thing.
Ronald Reagan, the god of
Of dirty wars, right? So just like that in Canada, if you think about the economics of Alberta, how many trillions of dollars have they cranked out of the ground through oil, through when oil was good? How much of that money stayed in there? Oh, yeah, because they have a super low marginal tax rate. What happens, right? You know, all those companies just cut and run. All these transnational companies put it in, their corporations put it in their pockets and leave them out to dry and just be like, oh, yeah, this is gay people's fault.
Right.
This is women who get abortions' fault somehow.
It's like, why aren't they paying a premium? Like, there should be, environmental destruction premium.
They should have universal basic income based on this stuff, right? You should just be like, you know what? Oh, yeah, Kinder Morgan, you want to make a buck? Well, you're going to be giving everyone 10 grand a month that lives in this province, you know? And so just to the disinformation aspect of it. So here's a few things. So this is the myth of the Asian market for Alberta's oil. Ajit, have you heard this?
Oh, where all the time.
Yeah, where it's like, YouTube, we need to sell to Asia. This is helping climate change because we're going to take the oil and sell it to Asia.
To China, yeah.
Okay, so check this out. So Canadian producers already have the ability to ship their heavy oil to Asia via the existing 300,000 barrel per day Trans Mountain pipeline, but they're not using it. Virtually no exports go to any markets other than the United States, economist Robin Allen told DSmog Canada. The entire narrative perpetrated by Prime Minister Trudeau and Alberta Premier Notley is fabricated. In 2017, the Port of Vancouver only shipped 600 barrels of oil to China. That's less than a tanker load.
Right.
That same year, the port also shipped 13 million barrels of oil, or about 24 Aframax tanker loads, to the United States. It's all BS, so it's just build the pipe. It doesn't do anything.
Right, so this whole Asian market thing is just a complete facade.
It's, could you believe it? It's propaganda. It's not real. It's just what they get the really silly Albertans, chanting to think that it's real, but it's not.
This is funny because I swear this idea, or this notion rather, is being pitched by the federal Liberals. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. And it's pitched by who? You know, the NDP. And this is what I'm trying to say. It's like, it's just a false narrative that they get, these really uneducated, white, privileged people to believe in. And I think it's super cynical. Right. And they're very easy to illustrate that point. Let's listen to this. Build that pipe, build that wall, build the wall, build the wall.
Lock her up.
These people have the same rhythmic, kind of thinking. And that's all they can do in this, these simple chants of build the pipe, lock her up, build the wall. It's all the same kind of stuff to them. It's just this, punch down.
Just the most elementary form of brainwashing.
And you know what? Quite frankly, I think they're very happy to be brainwashed. Right. These people are totally fine, being completely, having the wool pulled over their eyes. Because, it's their wool. They want the wool pulled over their eyes. It's not this, and that's why I don't buy the economic anxiety thing. It's not like that. It's not like the people of the Midwest that were working at GM factories building cars. Right. And then NAFTA just, took away the jobs, and moved it to Thailand.
Right.
That at least I have some sympathy for, but this stuff is just so blatant.
Right.
And that if they didn't believe this stupid, conservative crap that, what's good for the boss is good for you. Like, we'll talk, and they call us utopians. That's utopian. That these people with completely different economic interests.
So do you think it's social issues masquerading as economic issues?
What I think it is privilege. It's a system. It's a more or less a referendum on the status quo. And that's what it is. It's lock her up, build the wall, build the pipe. It's just a way of keeping things the way they are, and they want to go back to and this is why, we're a few shades away from fascism, that they want to go to this mythologized past of when, oil was booming. They don't live in the material world. They live off in frickin', outer space where where things are the way they wish it to be, not the way that things actually are in front of them.
This new general trend of thought and kind of procedure in politics, the status quo has become to attack the status quo, but the status quo now is a straw man that you just attack, right?
And yeah, it's these purple-haired weirdos, crying and stuff like that, being triggered.
Right.
Snowflake SJW, that's what they think the world
is. But liberals
is.
Do it too, right?
Well, both of them are. People, liberals and conservatives, capitalists broadly, for lack of a better term, think that this system can keep going. So they think that, you know, every Trump voter is like this, like, you know, cartoonish racist, and every, you know, Trump voter thinks that, you know, every liberal is like cartoonish SJW person.
Right.
And because in both of them are living in la la land, which is that, you know, oh, we can just, you know, smooth the edges of the system. The system can stay, but it can't. Because
no.
We can't keep exploiting the global south. We can't keep exploiting the world's natural resources. Right. We can't keep depriving people of basic necessities like clean water and flint. You know, you can't keep right. doing that.
Or rather, we can, but we have to live with the consequences.
And the only way that they can is by, you know, taking on, you know, LGBTQ students of all people. You know, like, that's all they can really do. And, you know, we're going to get to that. I guess, you know, that'd be a good segue. You know, let's talk about, you know, how you know, reactionary these people are. So, you know what? You know what we'll do? We'll break for ads, then we'll get back to that. So we're going to take a short break for ads, and then we'll get right back at it discussing the screwed up Alberta situation here. So stay tuned.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Hey, I'm Sarah from Alien Boys, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from NCU Musqueam territory. I'm with my co-host, Ajit.
What's up?
And I'm your host, Spencer Latu. And so we're getting back to the Alberta election situation here. So we were just discussing how, you know, build the pipe is basically build the wall, and that they live in fairy duster land where the price of oil is never going to go back up because climate change is real and everyone else realizes it and everyone's dumping their oil stocks and everyone's moving away from fossil fuels all together. So it's, you know, these people are trying to go back to a mythologized past, which is, you know, we're a few shades away from people trying to build the Third Reich of Canada, more or less, and thinking that we can live in this, you know, world that that existed in 1970s or something like that. So the other side to this is obviously the horrible fascistic tendency to destroy the most marginalized people. So here's what Jason Kenney's government's going to do to LGBTQ children. So back to the article. The article we're reading from is Jason Kenney wins in Alberta, setting stage for fierce conflicts, written by Jeff Dembicki, posted April 17th, 2019 to thetai.ca. So the article reads, Christopher Wells, an international expert on sexual and gender minority youth issues based at McEwen University in Edmonton, told the Tai that Alberta currently has some of the best legislation in the world for gay straight alliances in public schools, which creates spaces for LGBTQ students and their allies to be safe and open in their sexuality. The UCP, so this is the party that just got elected in Alberta, has promised to change the rules so that teachers have the option of informing a student's parents when they join a GSA. So GSA is a gay straight alliance. Why would we go backwards on that? Wells said. It's sound legislation that was developed out of concern and need by students and teachers on the grounds in schools. To roll that back, as many have suggested, would be to place vulnerable LGBTQ youth at risk, at increased risk in their schools. Wells continued, if a UCP government takes steps to change the legislation, I think you'll see this issue end up in court. Alberta's privacy legislation is pretty clear. A person's sexual orientation and gender identity and personal information, regardless of their age, can't be shared without their permission. So, a few things to break down there, Ajit. So, you know, the UCP promising to change the rules so that they have the option of informing a student's parents. So basically, they're just trying to create, you know, probably the most oppressive situation for LGBTQ youth.
Right. They're, I think they're allowing teachers to blackmail children. in a certain way, I guess.
Well, they're well, and it's also like putting them at risk of being outed, right? So you know, you know, and like these kids spend most of their time at school. That's their social setting. That's where all their friends are.
Right.
And they want a place where they can, you know, because like if it's a gay straight alliance, you don't know who's in it, right? You know, it's not very obvious to anyone that joins the club which side you're on. It's more of just like a space where you can just be like, oh, you know, ask questions, learn about it. You know, you could go in there as a straight kid and be like, oh, you know, what's all this going on about, you know, LGBTQ people or my friends LGBTQ and I want to be a better friend to them and understand. Or if you're someone who's not sure of, you know, how they feel about their sexuality, there's a great place to go, you know, meet other people and like learn about it, you know, maybe you are, maybe you're not, whatever, it doesn't really matter. Or you're just looking to hang out with friends and eat lunch at in school.
Exactly.
But no, according to the UCP, that's a huge problem. So climate change is on the issue of everyone's mind. They're going backwards on that. You know, inequality is skyrocketing. We have the worst inequality since the middle since ancient Egypt. Not even on their radar.
Right.
And in fact, actually, they're exacerbating that. We'll get back to that at another point. But for whatever reason, you know, what you know, LGBTQ teens are doing in high schools is more important.
Right.
How absurd is that?
Well, I mean, we have to march forward with the war on queers.
Yeah, clearly that's what it is. It's the it's the homosexual agenda of schools and turning.
I mean, who's is he kind of lobbying or kind of, you know, looking for the teacher vote with this crap? I don't know.
Well, so Jason Kenney, so you know, I was listening to podcasts trying to learn about this, you know, evil ghoul character. So he's a, you know, very like fundamentalist Catholic guy. So
privileged,
you know, yeah. Oh, very. So when he went to Catholic school in San Francisco for university, he was staunchly pro-life. So there's that. He has a picture of William Wilberforce, and he is a in his office. And who is that? Well, you know, that's next to Lincoln, St. Thomas More, and now William Wilberforce. I know quite a cast of characters in there. Yeah. William Wilberforce is, you know, this figure that's been adopted by the pro-life movement, and so he's a staunch pro-lifer, very against women's rights. Obviously, he, you know, this Wilberforce Alberta, so that's the pro-life group Alberta, equates women. So the people that Jason Kenney is directly working with equates women to, you know, if they think that, you know, abortion is murder, what does that make a woman?
Right, a murderer.
Right? So that's how they think about women. And he, you know, made obviously tons of anti-LGBTQ statements on as his time. That's what his entire...
I'm calling it now. He's a closet gay, I bet.
No, I don't think so. I think somebody with that much hatred, I just think that they're so indoctrinated. As someone, I went to religious school, so I can say that a lot of these people are just so... They're just so sure of it. They're just dogmatists.
Right, I'm telling you, though, there's, you know...
I don't think he...
Less than a 5% chance? Less than a 10% chance? All I'm saying is there's a chance.
It's like, the thing is, like, where this vitriolic hatred comes from, I think, at least, is just, you know, and it looks... Look at his economic... His politics reflect it, you know? And I don't think that he himself is. I just think that he likes to place the blame of society and how his worldview revolves around, you know, these people who are clear targets of society.
Right.
As the problem.
Well, there's nothing more... indicative of how blind his supporters are. It's like this guy went to private school in San Francisco, of all places. Like, you could call it the homosexual capital of North America. Like,
well, no, he was there. Do you know what he was doing in his school? He was going after the pro-choice groups. You know, from day one, he's been this.
Right. Well, it's easy to carve out, you know, by being a contrarian in those type of things. So I guess he's an opportunist too, of course.
Well, once again, I don't even think he's an opportunist. I just think he, like, this is who he is. He's just a hateful person.
Really?
You know? And
religious zealot.
Well, and look at him on every issue, right? He's, like, anti-immigration, anti-climate change. You know, I just think he might be just a hardcore, you know, fundamental, like, he's, like, one of those, you know, evangelical Christians, you know? He's like, one of those types, you know? He's,
born
like, kind of...
Yeah.
Well, he's not born... He was, like, raised this way. He's one of those, like, just, like, to the bone.
Yeah, like, just, yeah. Like,
yeah, yeah.
We'd say Puritan.
Yeah, he's, but like worse. So as Kenny, back to the article, as Kenny's UCP and its far-right base pushes for action on this and other social conservative issues, the party will also be moving to dismantle piece by piece Notley's environmental legacy. Kenny has promised to fight Canada's national carbon price in court, remove subsidies for clean energy, slow down the phase out of coal, and go after funding for BC environmental groups. If Kenny wins, be ready for a BC-Alberta war, was a headline of a Tai piece written earlier this month by Mount Royal political science professor Dwayne Bratt. Contacted by the Tai, Cesbra Berman, a Canadian environmental activist who is an international program director for the group Stand.Earth, said Kenny's confrontational rhetoric won't bring the benefits many Albertans are expecting. A swift return of jobs and the investment in the oil patch during an era when the world is rapidly shifting to cleaner sources of energy. Attacking those that are concerned about the cumulative impacts on our water, on our air, and on our climates as a result of the growth of the oil sands is not going to solve this, Berman said. It's a dramatic, overblown shoot-the-messenger moment. No matter how much Kenny attacks civil society groups and environmental groups, it's not going to make the issue go away. She predicted that a UCP government would govern by anger and fear and not reason or logic or science, and that this will set us back on climate policy. Berman, a one-time advisor to the Alberta government on climate policy, who frequently critiqued Notley's stance on pipelines, went on. While the NDP strategy was far from perfect, at least it was moving in the right direction, albeit slowly. So, a few things on this to break down. We've got, let's see, what do we got here? We got quite a bit, actually. So we have, you know, the clear backwards nature of the UCP, like we discussed earlier on social issues. And we have the, you know, the climate accelerator. So like we said earlier, it's very earlier on the show, previously on the show, we've made the point how, you know, the people with the least amount of privilege, the most oppressed in our society, Indigenous people right. are the ones putting their lives, putting their bodies on the line, and the people with the most privilege, with no oppression, you know, Jason Kenney and the UCP, are the ones accelerating the climate catastrophe. Oh, throw in corporations in there as well.
Right.
So, you know, and what is he doing? He's strawmanning once again, and he's pretending that these oil groups that are, you know, opposed to pipelines are the problem, but the reality is that we have a world that is going away from oil. China's going away from oil. Europe's going away from oil. Where are you going to sell the oil?
Right.
Where's it going to go?
To, like, the airlines.
Yeah, the United States. That's the only people they can sell it to, right? So it's right. just kind of this whole... I don't even know how to describe it. Once it's like what's the word I'm looking
fantasy
for?
Fantasy land.
It's fantasy land. It's wishful thinking.
Right.
Right. right? So check this out. So here's our great, amazing news source, Press Progress. Jason Kenney's economic policies would eliminate more jobs than 2015 oil crash, new study shows. Jason Kenney's $3.7 billion corporate tax giveaways and deep cuts to public services would kill nearly 60,000 jobs. So that's where, like, because it doesn't matter what you do. You can be the most, like, far-right libertarian, you know, free market will solve all. It doesn't change the fact that materially oil's not worth what it's used to.
Right. You'll be like the idiot stockpiling typewriters when the...
When the computers are coming out.
When the computers come
out. And that's what they're doing, right? Right. These are the people buying up Blockbusters when Netflix just came out.
Right.
That's the energy equivalent. You know, if you were thinking, right. you would be like, oh, let's use the oil to build solar stuff.
Right.
Like any smart person would. You know, let's use this to build electric cars and sell it if you were a true capitalist. But the problem is,
right.
is that this represents an end to the capitalist system, a system that is predicated on infinite growth within a finite system. It has finally hit the wall.
Infinite growth.
Because they can't. Now you actually have to start reusing stuff, and Kenny sees the writing on the wall. All these people see the writing on the wall, and that's why they're just going after the weakest people in society.
Right.
LGBTQ children to keep it going along. So, and here's another great great thing. So this is the United Conservative Party platform. According to Press Progress, they would harm workers, help corporations. The UCP platform is full of ideas to cut wages, cut overtime pay, cut public services, and cut jobs. So here's just Cole's notes. Freeze the minimum wage. More people than ever are getting paid minimum wage, so you're hurting the majority of people.
Right.
Getting rid of overtime. That's the problem. So now people that work
we're the regressing most of, that far back, okay.
Yeah, so the most hours worked by people in the sector are oil and gas people themselves, construction, manufacturing, and transportation. That's the top four.
I don't think these idiots read their own reports.
No, well, they don't care.
Right.
They don't care, right? And like the thing is that the people that don't even get paid overtime is, you know, someone that's worked in the service industry. Guess where that's at the bottom, right? These people are, you know, the most, you know, they get the lowest hours and no overtime pay. So you're just hurting the people that work the most. So it's just a pure, like, it's, and all the money that was entitled to them is now just going into the pockets of corporations. Right.
They're down to just F themselves.
Right, and it's when you equate the economy to the stock market. It's right. Not the same.
No, no.
That's how the bosses are doing. It doesn't matter how the bosses are doing. What are the majority of people? What are the 99%
Main
of people?
Street, right.
Yeah, it's, you know, oh, Bay Street's doing well. What about Main Street? You
right.
know? Massive spending cuts could cost thousands of jobs. So guess what? You know, that the tons of people are employed by the public sector.
Absolutely.
Right? Now they're all going to be jobless. So what are they going to do? Is everyone going to work in the oil patch? Clearly, that's the idea, but you know, that's what these people have come up with.
Yeah, the oil patch, which gets subsidies, by the way. So
yeah, so
yay,
you know,
for socialism.
Yeah, it's socialism, and that's what this is, right? So I'm glad you know, Ajit, you're gonna have the final word on that one. It's socialism for the rich, capitalism for everybody else.
Right, welfare for the rich.
Yeah, go deal with the free market. Everyone else will get bailed out. We're gonna bail out Kinder Morgan. We're gonna bail out Bombardier. We're gonna bail out GM. But you know what? Everyone else that, you know,
Lavalin.
Yeah, SNC-Lavalin. We're gonna go to bat for you. Julian Assange, an actual hero. Will any government stand up for him? No.
No.
Right. So we're gonna table that discussion for another day, and we're gonna leave that one on though. So basically, Alberta, you know, that's a great barometer of how far right. They're definitely the most far right province, I'd say. So, like, that's Jason Kenney.
They're the most robust about it.
He will probably be the barometer. And, like, as crazy as he's going, is, you know, he's going to represent, I think, the minority conservative view. But you can see where we're headed of more build the pipe.
All
can
right.
only get worse from here. So, you know, just because I want to gloat a little bit, we got to talk about Russiagate. So the Mueller report came out. Dun, 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 dun. Ajit, what were your thoughts on Russiagate from day one?
I mean,
big scam, little scam.
Yeah, it's a bit of both, actually.
I think it was just, you know, just a quick, if I were to sum up Russiagate in a word, I'd say distraction.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even care because, like, I hate
nobody cared.
I hate the media, and yeah, nothing was gonna come. Come on, power doesn't get challenged like that. Are you kidding me?
And you know who actually, you know, colluded with the Trump White House?
Who's that?
Israel. Yeah, Israel got Trump to lobby Russia. So the actual time that Russia's actually involved in collusion to vote to abstain on a motion at the UN Security Council to condemn Israel for, you know, blowing up Palestinians.
Right.
That's where it was. But did okay. We'll get to what. So this is from The Intercept. This is written by Glenn Greenwald. You know, probably the greatest Russiagate skeptic, taking the most amount of shit. So it's great that he's allowed to clap back at all these morons. MSDNC. You know, even Global News from Canada was pushing. They had their own Russia podcast that kind of imploded.
Wow.
And you know what? And we'll get to the we'll end the show on what the consequences in Canada are. But here's the headline. Robert Mueller did not merely reject the Trump-Russia conspiracy theories. He obliterated them. This is from Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept. Fantastic publication. So the article reads, the two-pronged conspiracy theory that has dominated U.S. political discourse for almost 3 years that, one, Trump, his family, and his campaign conspired or coordinated with Russia to interfere in the 2016 election, and two, Trump is beholden to Russian President Vladimir Putin, was not merely rejected today by the final report of Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Well, they're calling him Mueller. Is it not Mueller?
Well, pronunciation is usually on the person.
Yeah. Robert Mueller, because that's how it's spelled. Yeah, Special Counsel Mueller. Robert Mueller. Mueller, do you have any Russian collusion? Oh, there's going to be a lot of good jokes.
Right.
It was obliterated in an undeniable and definitive manner. The key fact is this. Mueller, contrary to weeks of false media claims, did not merely issue a narrow, cramped, legalistic finding that there was insufficient evidence to indict Trump associates for conspiring with Russia and then proving their guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. That would have been devastating enough to those who spent the last 2 years or more misleading people to believe that conspiracy convictions of Trump's closest aides and family members were inevitable. But his mandate was much broader than that, to state what did or did not happen. And that's precisely what he did. Mueller, in addition to concluding that evidence was insufficient to charge any American with crimes relating to Russian election interference, also stated emphatically in numerous instances that there was no evidence. Not merely that there was insufficient evidence to obtain a criminal conviction, that key prongs of his 3-year-old conspiracy theory actually happened. As Mueller himself put it, in some instances, the report points out the absence of evidence or conflicts in the evidence about a particular fact or event.
Well.
Well, then.
That uncovered a lot.
Well, and, you know, I can't believe this took 3 years.
I mean, I can believe it. That's how they, you know, let's stretch it out. Let's regurgitate the same crap. And
let's not look at the DNC and how the DNC cheated Bernie. That was the true election interference that happened, was cheating Bernie in the primary.
Right.
Rigging the primary.
That's, you know, that's when I start to, that's when the liberal media whole thing gets a bit proven true, right? So
it's entirely true. The liberal MSDNC was just, you know, pushing the Hillary Clinton talking points the entire time, and to follow up on, you know, who Robert Mueller even is, because, like, what was the last 3 years about? Was, you know, the Muellerites? There was a legitimate podcast of people who followed this religiously called the Muellerites. So people believed in this conspiracy theory so deeply, and everything, you know how much evidence was out there that, you know, proved that, like, oh, the P tape never existed, you know, no one that Trump, you know, and none of the people that got arrested by Trump, you know, sorry, none of the Trump people that got arrested, even, you know, none of the charges had anything to do with Russia, but that could not shake them. There was always like, oh, it's just proving that something bigger was coming and that they're just giving up more and more info. But clearly it's just a nothing burger.
I mean, it did. I feel like, you know, there is truth to the matter that, you know, there was a conspiracy to some degree, but that's just the normal work.
Is Trump corrupt? Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Right,
yes.
Right.
You, like, didn't need an FBI investigation.
No.
He says it openly. Right. He tweets about it. For Christ's sake, people.
Right.
Is he using the presidency to enrich himself? Right. Yes.
Do the Russians want to manipulate American politics like I'm sure they've done to them?
Does Canada want to manipulate American politics?
Right.
Does Saudi Arabia want to manipulate American politics? And are they currently doing it? Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. Right. Does Israel want to manipulate American politics? Yes.
Well, they create American polls. I'm joking.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no conspiracy theories. Anyways, so speaking of which, let's hear about Robert Mueller, this great guy that we're all supposed to rally the troops around, and everyone was supposed to believe was actually going to actually, you know, provide, be a great truth teller and bring down the Trump administration, and was such an awesome guy that liberals just couldn't stop loving him. So let's just hear what his take on Iraq and WMDs were. Let's find a clip that works about Robert Mueller and the WMDs. Okay. So this is Robert Mueller on WMDs.
Director Tenet has pointed out, Secretary Powell presented evidence last week that Baghdad has failed to disarm its weapons of mass destruction, willfully attempting to evade and deceive the international community. Our particular concern is that Saddam Hussein may supply terrorists with biological, chemical, or radiological material.
That's Bob Mueller for you, folks. Absolutely no integrity, pushing the greatest lie ever told, that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and that caused the greatest humanitarian disaster of the 21st century, which is the destruction of Iraq, the creation of ISIS, and that was all thanks to people who are now, you know, at the heart of the Russiagate conspiracy. So to end the show, we're going to discuss the, you know, the after effects of this horrible conspiracy theory and the joke that the media has become in pushing this horrible conspiracy theory for 3 years. So we're going to take a short break for commercials. We'll be right back.
I'm going away. Look into my eyes. The last Sunday of every month from 11. Won't you hear with me at the Wise Hall Fleet? Wise Hall Fleet.
This band is really good, and I've been wanting to find out more about local music.
Yeah, I heard about it through CITR and Discorder.
What's that?
It's a radio station. You can review all the music that comes in and help out with touring bands or just do some data entry to get started in their music department.
Oh, cool.
yeah, you can just email volunteer@citr.ca and they can help you register the station or just come in whenever. Well, I'll be there, so...
Heavy Metal Radio. It'll have you saying, yeah. Tune in every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Unseo Musqueam territory with my co-host, Jeet.
Bonjour.
And comment ça va? And we are here discussing Russiagate. So Russiagate, Jeet, now that it's over, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, just to kind of go back on what we were just talking about right before we went to commercial, it's like this, you played like a clip of Robert Mueller. You know, I think he was testifying or pretty much going along with the whole, you know, WMD conspiracy. And one thing the media did was build up this false narrative that, you know, this guy is our guy. But, like, he was, like, a top official, I think, in the FBI during the Bush era, right? So I always thought, and I was surprised nobody, no analyst or, you know, political commentator, opinionist even bothered to say this is, like, What about if your tribe is your tribe, right?
Bush, like, has been rehabilitated. His approval rating is at 63%.
Right.
Everyone's turned their back on it. Like, the Bush years were cool by these people's standards. They wish Bush was back. And right. It doesn't matter what these people do, because that's what it is. Trump is just, you know, he's the ugly face of the same thing that's been going
exactly.
on forever. And you know what the worst thing about it is? This Russiagate, pushing Russiagate for the last 3 years, has now given him 2020.
Right.
Because you know what the Democrats are going to do. They're just going to try to screw with Bernie. Bernie's the only person that can beat Trump.
Right.
The Democrats are going to be pulling Bernie down. The Republicans are going to be attacking Bernie. And now, even if they do, like, even if Joe Biden somehow squeaks through, now look at Trump. He looks like a freaking hero for surviving a literal witch hunt.
Right.
That's the American consequence. Jeet, do you have any thoughts on that?
It's the parallel to, you know, the whole nothing burger of the Clinton blowjob scandal.
Well, but and like the thing is, I think it's far worse than the, like, because right, at least the Clinton blowjob thing, he came out on top. He was better for it, and so is
literally
Trump.
And figuratively.
You know, right? Like yeah, and it's one of those things where I cannot stress enough how irresponsible and reckless that was, because even people on the left were pushing Russiagate. I get that the centrist libs were pushing it, or like the moderate Republicans of the Democratic Party were pushing it, because of course they can't look at themselves. They can't be like, oh yeah, Hillary Clinton was the worst candidate ever and we cheated, the only candidate that could beat him, and look at ourselves and be like, oh, this is our fault. But you know, now the people on the left that were pushing on it, people who have community radio shows on YouTube, or you know, not big names at all, and the far from the mainstream media, we're pushing Russiagate as well.
Oh yeah,
what are you doing?
The so-called alternative media.
Yeah, and now alternative. You know, it's straight down line, and now look what they've done. Now everybody, and this is what I'm saying. Now everything that goes wrong
right.
is now Russian interference. So I just want to end on this note here. CBC News. This is from November 18th, 2018. Headline: next Canadian federal election will be target for Russian meddling, says Defense Minister Sajjan. So nobody wants to be duped by fake news, says Defense Minister. That's where we're at.
Right.
Everything that goes against the status quo is fake Russian news.
Right.
Everything that goes wrong with the status quo is from Russia. And what is that? What does that amount to? Now we're pushing the old neocon agenda of war with Russia.
Right. No, exactly. It's like, you know, what was that question they asked us at the end of our foreign policy class of U.S. history? It's like, is the Cold War ever going to end? Like, you know, the boogeyman's never going
to
go away.
The military-industrial complex always needs somebody else to go to war with.
Right. So does the media.
The media needs, well, they need a boogeyman to distract people from the fact that, you know, what, 46% of Canadians are $200 away from financial insolvency.
Right.
Right? Life expectancy in America is going down.
Mm.
How does that happen in an industrialized country? Mortality is going up. People are dying sooner. You know, Americans, half of Americans are poor, low income.
Right.
And that's what this is. It's just a distraction. You know, oh, let's all get behind, you know, our big strong man Trudeau or our big strong man Trump and fight off the evil Russians. Like, talk about something that's not even close to reality. There's no Russian threat.
Right.
What are you talking about? The greatest threat to security is climate change. And we're spending our time talking about Russia.
Right. But I feel there is a threat in the sense that, you know, the same sort of forces which on a, let's say, conservative side will exploit this sort of demographic insecurity. It's the same, you know, like, you know, I'm sure Russia, like, exists on the internet because the internet is a global, international, you know, engine.
Do you know how many, like, and even, okay, so Russia's on the internet. Millions of dollars are spent by the CIA doing this. CIA people who are the ones who created sock puppet accounts. Share Blue, that's the Hillary Clinton campaign using Twitter bots.
Right.
To post articles to the horrible centrist think tanks.
Right.
So it's like, you know, it's, just, don't get me wrong, like, yeah, Russia's on the internet. Yeah, Russia is spreading disinformation. Yeah, of course, they're spreading propaganda. How about the U.S. propaganda about Venezuela? How about the U.S. propaganda about everything? You know, the U.S. propaganda about itself, U.S. propaganda about Syria. It's just, you know, to what scale, right? Like, is there Russian meddling? Of course, you know, but is it a threat?
Right.
No.
And they're following our model of let's feed them bullshit, so.
Yeah, let's just pump up the population with a bunch of, what?
Like, I don't know if I could swear.
Yeah, you can swear. Okay. It's great. Swearing is awesome. yeah, it's just this is exactly what we're going to be dealing with, you know, in our own politics now, is that everything that isn't, you know, everything that that's going to come out of the Kenny camp is going to be Russian propaganda. But you know what else is going to be Russian propaganda? You know, look at Bernie. They said Bernie was colluding with Russia. They said Jill Stein was colluding with Russia. So if you're too far to the left of the mainstream, you're Russian. If you're too far to the right of the mainstream, you're Russian. They're branding everybody that isn't the quote unquote safe middle center. They're just going to do the bidding of empire. They aren't going to do the bidding of the banks. They're going to do the bidding of the big corporations. You're Russian.
But I don't know if you heard, Bernie had a so-called secret meeting in Bernie Towers with Lenin.
With Lenin. Yeah, I wish. Yeah, it's a... let me just read the first paragraph of this article. It's just so funny. With a federal election less than a year away, Canada's defense minister is warning voters they'll be targeted by online cyber attacks and fake news as Russia steps up its efforts to undermine Western democracies. First of all, Russia is a capitalist country. Oh, where's this east-west
very
divide?
Very hardcore capitalist.
Yeah, they were, because guess what? The first election, which they do have elections, because after the Soviet Union fell, they tried to elect another communist to power. But guess what? The U.S. invaded, had a mini coup, and now Yeltsin was elected, which then led to our greatest enemy, Putin. Right. So the United States made Putin possible, and now they're trying to pretend, and you know, this is Canadian media here, you know, pretending that there's this east-west divide of some sorts.
No, there's the guys who have it and the guys who don't.
Yeah, and Russia's part of it's one big club and you're not in it.
Right.
It's not like Russia is, you know, not a democracy. They have elections.
Right.
You know, I'm sure they have probably higher voter turnout than the United States. Right. Does that make the United States not a democracy?
Well, I mean, yeah, they're a regular democracy, I would say. Just like America.
And what is fake news? You know, is fake news with the 3 years of Russiagate?
Right.
Or was fake news things from alternative media? Because since the Russiagate started, look at the alternative press, Truth Out, Truth Dig, the World Socialist website, all these, you know, alternative media sources, now their traffic's even lower. Their search history, you can't even find them on the front page of Google anymore. The Intercept is off of the front page of Google now.
No, it's funny because, like, you know, example, it's like Young Turks, right? When I was in high school, like, I don't know, 5 years ago, these guys were pretty on top of it, right? Reporting about stuff which wasn't, you know, getting the press coverage that it should. Now, I don't even bother because every last 3 years, collusion, like their freaking damn Armenian genocide denying host says. I don't know, I'm joking.
It's, and this is what we're down to now. So now anyone that represents an alternative is part of the problem. They're all Russian agents, and all the people that pushed this for the last 3 years that didn't have the bravery to say that this is clearly bullshit.
Right.
This is all your fault, because Trump's going to get elected in 2020.